It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running for this 14th day of March 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. Yes, this program's live. This program's always live unless it's not. Come on. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we've got a downright bundle of them to wrap our hands around. Yeah, it's going to... But what a day. Now, we're battening down hatches here at the magnificent Kincaid Studios in the at the fabulous Horn, the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Branding matters. You got to get that stuff right. Because I guess we're going to have some high winds coming here later. They're battening down in Kentucky Stan, according to Trey, as well. Because, you know, it's early March, so naturally we've got thunderstorms predicted for overnight. Somewhere around 3 a.m. I expect to be jarred right up out of the bed as whatever this is blows through. But what a day, what a day, what a day, what a day. It was beautiful. Right now in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it is 82 degrees in the studio. Yes. So out of an abundance of regard for the fact that even with my language being what it is, sometimes this here is a family program. We're not doing naked radio today. No, we are not. Even though it's 82 degrees in the studio, we're doing Speedo radio today. Try not to have the visual, will you? Because it's, well, the horror. Yes. But, yeah. Okay. It has nothing to do with being family radio. It has to do with the fact that I've noticed that on days like this that I tend to stick to the leather of the chair, and that's what it boils down to, and the Speedo helps with that a little bit. Yes. But it is. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I thoroughly expect that there will be an abundance of just plain old straight up white wing crazy for the evening. Yeah, and but before we go any further, thanks. We have thanks to send out on this 14th day of the month, which, by the way, now that we have two new subscribers on the 13th, the 13th is no longer the loneliest day for fundraising subscriber-wise on the Horn. It's the 14th. Yes. So thanks go out to Ralps today, and thanks go out to Matt in San Francisco. And so that the 14th is now the loneliest subscriber day on the calendar here at the Horn. And with that in mind, I have a challenge. I had a note from Gary, half of the team of Gary and Gaia out in Oregon, listening to Tuesday's podcast, and I understand that we got another subscriber for the 13th. Since it's too late to have a challenge for today, I propose a $50 Not As Lonely 13th on the 14th challenge as a celebration for the new Thursday program. New subscriber, that is, to the 13th. So there's a $50 challenge on the table. If somebody would like to step up and become a subscriber to draw even with the 13th, that would be awesome. But there's a $50 challenge on the table, and the fundraising goal for the evening stands at $350. And if the challenge is met, then that'll take us down to $250, and maybe we can have a shot at making it to Friday on the front porch without needing a community-made miracle. But thanks again to Matt in San Francisco and to Ralphs up in Wisconsin for your subscriptions today. Thank you very much. It is also, as Scott in San Diego notes, Pi Day. Yes, 3.14, et cetera, et cetera. It's 314. It's Pi Day. So happy Pi Day to you all. It comes but once a year. I realized that I was watching the late 80s production of the Kenneth Branagh production of Henry V. And, you know, there's that that scene toward the end there where Henry V is talking to Captain Fluellen, who's all worked up about his Welshness. And there was mention of, but you do wear the leek on St. Davy's Day. And not knowing much, by Jove, St. Davy's Day, the national holiday of Wales, is March the 1st. And I missed it this year. I vowed not to miss St. Davy's Day again. For I too, have the Welsh in my background. So, you know, the leek and all of that stuff. Odd I would mention that, seeing as how we're bearing down on St. Paddy's Day. And for that reason, the Prime Minister of Ireland and his significant other paid a visit today to Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek and Mother, who you recall, Mother teaches art to the children of little bigots at a religious school somewhere in the D.C. area that makes a point of making sure that nobody even says don't even say the gay, let alone be it. Mm-hmm. It turns out that the Prime Minister of Ireland's significant other is the Prime Minister of Ireland is a guy, and the Prime Minister of Ireland's significant other is a guy. So that there were pictures, and I swear, it looked like Mother had just taken a big dose of castor oil. Mm-hmm. But good on him for doing that and making Mother and Mike Pencilneck Geek just stand there with all that gayness all around them, and they couldn't even try to do any conversion therapy. Oh, it was beautiful. It was really, really, it was a lovely moment. And there were meetings with people like Senator Patrick Leahy. There was a reception at the White House, and God only knows how that went. It had to be weird. Steve in New York tells me it's not only Pi Day, it's Pi to the 31 trillion digits day. Holy cow, somebody must have, that must be the Uniblab 10,000 calculating digits out that far. 31 trillion digits. Emma Haruka Iwao smashes Pi world record with Google help. She calculated a new world record length of 31 trillion digits, way past the previous record of 22 trillion. You're going to have to get up mighty early in the morning to get past 31 million digits next time. Remember, pi is the number you get when you divide the circumference of a circle by its diameter. And what the Pythagoreans, for instance, were fascinated with numbers. And pi just goes on forever. It never terminates. It never repeats. I mean, you know, there's only nine numbers, but that's amazing. I don't know, maybe when we get to those quantum computers, maybe we'll finally lick it and we'll find the end of the road to pi, but I wouldn't be betting on it. So, you know, we're off and running, and by the way, if you want to help bring the fundraising down, remember, there's a challenge on the table, courtesy of Gary and Gaia, on this Pi Day. And you're more than welcome to jump in. Remember also, over at HeadOn.live, we've got an equipment fundraiser going on. We're trying to raise enough for a new gizmo for some remote broadcasting and a new laptop to drive it. Right now we are at $1,700 to go out of an even 2,000. So if you want to contribute to that, there's a separate button. It's right there on the main page at HeadOn.live. And yes, as Randy and PA points out, pi. It's not three like the Bible says. Eh, what do you want, Randy? They measured shit in cubits. So, the sooner we get there, the sooner I can order it and learn how to use it so I'm not screwing up once we're ensconced in D.C. Okay, then. What else? Let's see. We did that. You know, it's a good thing that the Irish Prime Minister, and it's a word, by the way, it's a Gaelic word, and I don't dare try to pronounce it, but it's a good thing he was there in D.C. and not across the pond. No, it's not Wednesday, but we have to bring we have to bring these things up as they happen sometimes. There, a petition is being considered in the UK to ban an individual from being able to enter Great Britain. The individual's name is Rabbi Yosef Mizrachi. And it's quite likely that he will be prevented from entering the UK. I hope he is, because this is one hateful prick. Oh, we're off and running. 13 past the hour, and we're already using the words that the little ones shouldn't be knowing how to use. Dear me, dear me, dear me. Yeah, Rabbi Yosef Mizrachi, since it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this is a real ouch. Oh, wait, what's that? Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. 82 degrees. So it's Banana Hammock Radio? What color? After all, it is Theater of the Mind. Well, it's a Speedo. And it's got a narrow horizontal black and white stripe, or black stripes on a white background, or maybe white stripes on a black background. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's kind of a nautical motif. Think of it that way.
Why are you describing your Speedo?
Why am I describing my Speedo, dear?
Yes.
Because I was asked, because it's Theater of the Mind.
That's disturbing, even to me.
Well, I know it's disturbing. That's why you're in there and I'm in here. Yeah, imagine that. Me in a Speedo is more disturbing than me naked. That says something, doesn't it? So anyway, Rabbi Yosef Mizrachi, was scheduled to give lectures at synagogues in London on March the 15th and 16th. I wonder if people are going to holler anti-Semitism because I'm calling this dude out. Because this guy's disgusting. Well, I don't think you can holler anti-Semitism over this one, because the chief rabbi of the UK, a guy named Ephraim Mirvis, has also called this jackass out. They've been trying to get him banned from the UK since about 3 years ago. Why? Well, because the UK is willing to ban someone from entering the sceptred realm in instances where someone engages in conduct so hateful that it would just pollute the realm if the person were merely to enter it. For instance, Rabbi Mizrachi has said that children with Down syndrome and autism are being punished by the almighty, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-loving creator of the universe because in a previous life they gossiped. Rabbi Mizrachi has also said that children who are born blind, you know, as opposed to, say, a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian who got his eyes poked out in a fight with Jesus in a parking lot in Tallahassee. No, not like that. Representative Eric Porterfield of West Virginia. No, not him. But Rabbi Mizrachi says that children who are born blind are being punished by the almighty, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-loving creator of the universe for having watched porn in a previous life. I never knew, and maybe people who are more expert on things like this can help me out. I didn't know that there was a reincarnation aspect to Judaism. I thought it pretty much broke pretty well along a single line between there ain't no dress rehearsal and this is it, and, you know, some sort of afterlife bosom of Abraham kind of thing. I never got to the reincarnation part. No. He also says that women get breast and cervical cancer because they were whores and sluts. And not to give the guys a break or anything, prostate and brain cancer, according to this jackass, come from dirty thoughts and men being licentious. You know, kind of like maybe Lot in the book of Genesis, who let his daughters give him cocktails, and then they went a-romping on daddy. And then there's the larger question of why people aren't religious at all in the first place. Mm-hmm. According to Rabbi Mizrachi, that's because they have been influenced by, wait for it, gay university professors. Mm-hmm. Yep. But, of course, there's one more. America, according to Rabbi Mizrachi, has elevated crime because in 1863 and 1865, human beings were freed, wait for it, from slavery. Boy, howdy, I tell you what, I hope they never meet, but if there was ever a guy who needed to sit down in a nasty-ass triumvirate, say maybe, oh, how about Pat Robertson, this guy, and the head majestic, serene, noble, Ayatollah graciousness of Iran, That'd be a hell of a that'd be one hateful trifecta here on the planet. Let's hope it doesn't happen. No kidding. But again, while I thought about this because I was talking about how Mother Pence didn't get to try any of her pray the gay away conversion therapy today at the Naval Observatory. Rabbi Mizrachi claims to have cured hundreds of people of their homosexualism. And anybody who says he hasn't, he says they are worse than Hitler. And you can find him out there if you look hard enough. You'll find him calling gay people sick and disgusting, criminal, and telling them, make sure that this closet goes in a bigger closet so if you want to come out, you'll still be in. Mm-hmm. Novominsk Rebbe, who's president of Agudath Israel of America, said that Rabbi Mizrachi's demonstrably false, profoundly offensive, and extremely hurtful. The lectures, and wow, who booked this guy? The lectures he's slated to give in the UK are called Defeating the Modern-Day Amalek, Enemies of Israel, and True Submission to Hashem's Will. Still waiting. Well, I didn't forget Jesse Lee Peterson, Silent R. Lamar. It's just that I don't consider him to be in the same league with former liquor supply officer Marion Pat Robertson. Mm-hmm. And no word yet on whether he's been officially banned, but we can yet hold out hope. What's that, Steve, in New York? Helen Keller watched porn in a prior life? Yeah, I know it becomes true, but see, not so fast. Helen Keller was not born blind. She had sight for about a year of her life before she got scarlet fever, which took from her both her hearing and her sight, and she had just begun to make little baby talk sounds. So she was not born that way, so apparently she did not see porn in a previous life. You know, I'm going to take a pass on that offer, Billable Rick. Subject line, your Speedo. You can always snap a photo of you in your full Speedo glory and put it on Instagram. On second thought, why don't you keep your junk to yourself? See, I like the second idea better than the first idea, because I would be banned for life from Instagram if I did that. Or perhaps what's even worse, I would become a meme, and I don't want to be one of those. Obligatory Star Trek reference, Pi Day Star Trek reference, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. Spock kills an evil computer with Pi in the original series episode Wolf in the Fold, I remember. Wasn't that when the computer had become possessed by the Jack the Ripper kind of murderer, and he had to cause the computer to have a nervous breakdown by computing? That was that one, wasn't it? And saying long live Wales, Charlie in Tennistan has met Gary and Gaia's challenge, so that means that we have only $250 to finish fundraising for the evening, which is freaking awesome. Thank you very kindly, Charlie. Hopefully you'll have some company here shortly. 10 at 25, 25 people at $10 a piece. One way or the other, we can probably knock this down. That would be wonderful. No, I already said, Randy, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but we have to deal with the stories when they arise. It's thorn in the side Thursday. And that was a pretty thorny story. Silent R. Lamar. Hey, here's an idea, Bob. Let the mad rabbi fly into England on a Boeing 737 MAX 8. Yeah, but they won't fly with just one passenger. And you wouldn't want to do that to the crew and the pilot or anything. No, you wouldn't do that. Still, I appreciate the creativity that went into the thought. Hey, by the way, if you'd like to, feel free to go over to HeadOn.live and click on chat room and jump into the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza conversation that takes place every evening when the program's live. Being a spacing guild master, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky has folded space on a beautiful day in Northern California to become Man Cave, and you'll be greeted by Anatole and Dowhead and Squeaky right now as more people wander by later on. Doggone it, Warrior Witch, where'd you go? I was gonna wish you happy birthday on St. Patrick's Day, since it'll fall on the weekend. But Warrior Witch's 40th birthday will fall on Sunday. So happy birthday. Maybe I hope you're still listening. There's VT Blom wandering in. And I guess we've got to get around to what happened in the Senate today. I knew it had not gone well when I saw that Julius Geezer put up another one of his one-word, all-caps tweets. Veto! Veto! I know. I think it works better done as it... Right. I responded, override! Because it wasn't just the four Republican senators needed to approve of the House resolution disapproving of his bullshit national emergency. No, not by a long shot. It was 12. So if you take the 45 Democrats, the two independents, that's 47, and that's 59. What's significant about that number, 59, is precisely nothing except for the fact that it is 8 votes short of a veto override, two-thirds, 67. Because two-thirds of 100 is 66.6, so we have to round up to 67. You need 67 votes to override a presidential veto. Now, could they muster one of those in the House? I don't know. Probably because the maggot is stronger in the House than it is in the Senate to a certain extent. Maybe not, but it'll be interesting to see him sweat that out. And he was tweeting for all he was worth earlier today, but he found himself caught up in watching Fox and Friends when he probably should have been trying to scrounge up votes. That was it's kind of a historic vote in the House today. And among other things, those towers of constitutionalism included Ben Sasse, a new and different kind of Republican. What makes him a new and different kind of Republican? Well, he's youngish and fairly polished looking and white and handsome, and he doesn't look like a complete crank, and gosh, he talks about unpacking things. He uses millennial speak when he talks. But by way of explaining why he voted against the Constitution and in favor of Donald Trump, because that's what it boiled down to. I think that law is overly broad, and I want to fix it, but at present Nancy Pelosi doesn't, so I'm therefore voting against her politically motivated resolution. You sorry, sad sack of shit. No, that's just him being scared to death of Julius Geezer. Because Nebraska is still a maggoty state. I was curious. I didn't have a chance to look this up. I wonder if he's up. Nah, he couldn't possibly be. Why, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, he is. Ben Sasse, a new and different kind of repiglickin', is up for re-election in 2020, and he is shaking in his boots because he knew that if he had gone against Julius Geezer, he would have found himself getting primaried by somebody who was even more maggoty than he was, even though he, Ben Sasse, is a new and different kind of Republican. And constitutional scholar that he is, he said the law is overly broad. But even though the law is overly broad, he's not willing to take power away from Julius Geezer. Even though the emergency powers that he has, if they continue, and really, there's not much of a way of stopping them, if they continue through 2020, those emergency powers could come in real handy for either stopping an election or invalidating one, or maybe even refusing to leave office if he gets his ass handed to him. Steve in New York pointing out, there's no emergency. Let's hope that this vote is a result of the 2018 election and a harbinger of things to come. Well, see, I mean, we got to be realistic about this. For instance, Mike Lee got on board, the noted constitutional scholar from Utah, and that's mainly because Mike Lee is not facing re-election in 2020. See how it works? Anybody got a vote rundown on who voted how? It would be interesting to find out where those 12 senators that did vote to check these dictatorial powers, whether they face a 2020 challenge or not. Oh, there it is. There it is. The vote was 59-41. That's pretty stunning. Let's see. Senator Lamar Alexander voted for the resolution, claiming that the power grab was inconsistent with the Constitution that I took an oath to protect and defend. And his national emergency sets a dangerous precedent because already Democrat presidential candidates say they'd declare emergencies to tear down the wall and restrict gun ownership and cut down oil exports and offshore drilling and other left-wing enterprises. It's a hell of a reason for voting that way, but oh well. Again, because I'm a political cynic, I'll point out that Lamar Alexander has announced that he's retiring after the end of this term, and so he won't be running for re-election in 2020, so he didn't have to fear Julius Geezer. Showing people like Bob Corker and Jeff Flake what it's like to actually stand up to a dictatorial punk. Then there's Roy Blunt from Missouri, also not facing re-election in 2020. Susan Collins, who is. Jerry Moran of Kansas, who isn't. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Not sure if she's up or not, or whether that's her other Senate colleague. Rand Paul and that thing on his head from Kentucky. Rob Portman of Ohio. Bishop Willard Romney of Utah, who doesn't face an election challenge in 20. Little Marco Rubio from Florida. Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, Tuckistan. Vania. And Roger Wicca of Mississippi. Now, over in the House, remember, only 13 Republicans in the House broke with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Steve in New York, the $64,000 question, what about Joe Manchin? Joe Manchin got it right. Every now and then, a blind hog, who, of course, is blind because the hog saw porn in a prior life. I don't even want to think about what hog porn looks like, but obviously even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. But it's interesting because that's probably about as many Republicans as, because, you know, the 2020 Senate map is damned interesting. Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, South Dakota, Nebraska, Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Stan, Mississippi, Stan, Alabama, Georgia, Stan, South Carolina, Stan, North Carolina, Stan, Kentucky, Stan, West Virginia, Stan, and Maine, Stan, as well as Talibandiana. But Talibandiana has allegedly a retiring Democrat senator. But all those other states, Nebraska, Stan, Tennessee, they've got Republican senators who are up for re-election. And they might be getting just a little bit, nervous. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Geez, my maternal grandfather died from prostate cancer because he worked in the brass mills in Waterbury, Connecticut, and was exposed to, you know, chemicals. Sadly, I never got the chance to meet him as a result. I'd love to know what sin I committed in a previous life to deserve my current life struggling with FSH muscular dystrophy. Whatever the rabbi decides it is, then my late maternal grandmother, one of her late nieces, my mother, aunt, and two surviving cousins, the third died unexpectedly and was believed to have also had FSH, must have also committed the same sin in a previous life. What a despicable group of dregs we all are. Guess the sin runs in the family. Or maybe the miserable dreg is actually that shit-eating rabbi. I wonder where he came from. That he had to, you know, use a passport to get into Great Britain. I mean, is he one of those, members of the tribe who didn't leave Persia when they had the chance? Is it maybe from there? Or, I don't know, maybe he's from South Africa? Or, I mean, because that sounds kind of old school South African. Maybe he's from the United States. Who knows? Wouldn't be the first time we've had a lunatic rabbi talk crazy shit. No. Robert in Australia tells me, we're having an election next week in New South Wales. Hot diggity. That sounds fun. Robert includes a link with that. Let's find out what the link's about. shall we?
Ooh, it really is a little warm back here.
But it's not like there's anything... No. Ah, yes, the election in New South Wales.
Hello, I'm from the Australian Government, here to bring you a special weather forecast. Australia is about to head into a federal election. This means you can expect a high-pressure system of bullshit to form over Canberra. The bullshit will spread across the continent rapidly, thanks to Tropical Cyclone Rupert, causing scattered showers of misplaced fears of refugees that will distract voters from the real existential threat we face. Climate catastrophe. You know, rivers vomiting up dead fish. Roads melting. Tasmania on fire. Townsville underwater. Crocs cruising the streets. And the first mammal just went extinct due to rising sea levels. Cool and normal. Few will emerge from this election without being covered in bullshit, especially children, who'll be the ones to pay for it. That's why they're skipping school and going on strike, because they know this is a crisis requiring an emergency response. Lucky for us, the little shits can't vote yet.
Go back to school, little shits. Then you can one day become a scientist,
whose climate change science we can ignore. As you can see, we care about climate change and your kids' future. That's why our coal fondler-in-chief has just announced the Climate Bullshit Fund. Will it help us meet our Paris emissions target in a canter? Sure, by using accounting tricks rather than reducing actual emissions. Your grandchildren will love hearing that story whilst playing Survivor on a dead planet fucked by our dickhead accountant ancestors. Is it just a rebranding of Tony's even older bullshit policy? The one that caused emissions to rise ever since he scrapped the carbon price? Of course it is. We're just hoping you're too stupid to remember that. Do we still plan to build new coal-powered stations? Absolutely. Not only that, we're also promising to make you pay for their debts when they can no longer compete with renewables. That's free insurance for private companies to shit on the planet, go broke, and have you pick up the tab. Fair dinkum power. So remember, despite all the bullshit leading up to the election, we're still just a bunch of bought and paid for shills, desperately hoping to use your money to bail out our rich moron friends who thought coal had a future, rather than your children. Australian Government. Vote for us, because bullshit, 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 bullshit. Authorised by the Department of Adults requiring child supervision.
Top shelf. That's some great stuff. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very, very kindly, because, well, wouldn't it be kind of nice to... We're going to be swamped in political ads, but remember... We've got a broadcast scheme here in the new United States of America that says you can't say bullshit on the TV, but you can, as Tucker Carlson has proven, you can act as a clearinghouse for white supremacist talking points. Because freedom. Yep, right. Sure. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the clarification from Dave in Taliban, Indiana. Both Indiana senators aren't up until at least 2022 when Senator Young, now the senior senator and conservative Christian, knows he doesn't call himself a Republican, will be up for re-election, and Mike Braun, who took out Joe I Don't Want Your Vote Donnelly in the last election, won't be up for another 6 years. Just thought you'd like to know how miserable I'm going to be for the next few years. Well, no, he's up, Young is up in 20, apparently. But you're right, you don't get a chance to throw out Braun until 2024. Right. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I guess we'll, has the bill been vetoed yet? Margie had a doctor's appointment today, so I didn't follow as closely as I should have. Or maybe he'll make a big deal out of the veto or something equally stupid like that. It is thorn in the side Thursday, however, and this is one. I've had this sitting around, for about 3 days now. It seemed kind of thorn in the side Thursday-ish. You know how in North Korea, the little dude with the bad haircut and the worst golf pants? The latest dear leader.
and his daddy, too, for that matter, were constantly lionized by state-controlled media as the best at everything they did. You know, if he went out and shot some hoops, you know, he was actually 8 feet tall, that kind of thing. Well, we took another step along that road here in the new 90 states of Murka recently. According to golf.com, sorry, something that you don't always get to pick your sources. According to golf.com, the Tangerine Tiberius has been officially named the winner of the 2018 Golf Championship that was held at one of his seedy-ass golf clubs that he got a bunch of welfare for. It took place at the Trump International Golf Club in Florida. That's one of those ones that's hemorrhaging money. And he put a wager forward, a bet, on a 9-hole challenge against a guy named Ted Virtue, because the goddess of irony never sleeps, who actually won the tournament. And he took Trump up on the bet and lost. Trump had said, "The only reason you won is because I couldn't play, because I'm so busy presidentin'." So, yes, Donald Trump has been declared the champion of a golf tournament he didn't even play in. I mean, I always thought the benchmark standard for that kind of shit was, improve your lie, Judge Schmeels. But he didn't even know. Golf.com quoted the Chlamydia Claudius as saying, "This isn't fair. We'll be co-champions." He's also claimed victories in 1999 and 2001 and 2009, and the senior champion from 2012 and 2013. Inquired of by Golf.com, people who worked at the club said, "We're not allowed to discuss club matters because it'll probably throw us out on our ear if we do." That's what Thursdays are for. Oh, by the way, and this is just maggots being maggots. Over in Virginia, the Old Dominion, going back to the whole resolution against Julius Geezer's power grab, there's a member of Congress by the name of Representing Denver Riggleman. That's Riggleman with no W. And claimed this week that he voted for, in the House of Representatives, that he voted for the resolution against the power grab. Because apparently his constituents saw that as being... No. So he sent out an email this past Monday to some of his supporters. And it said, sorry, had to move the mic, tiny print.
Thank you for contacting me with your thoughts regarding the president's recent national emergency declaration. It is an honor to represent the people of Virginia's 5th Congressional District, and I appreciate the opportunity to learn your thoughts on this here issue. You may remember, a few weeks ago, I voted yes on a proposal to fund the government. This bill provided over $60 million to help combat the opioid epidemic, $50 million for rural broadband, $7.6 billion for ICE, and $14.9 billion in appropriations for the new United States Office of Customs and Border Protection. The bill provided an increase in funding for border protection and removed the threat of government shutdown from our border security. President Trump declared a national emergency for our southern border, and the House of Representatives voted on a resolution to terminate it. There is a crisis on our southern border, and President Trump is right in his demand enough money to build a border wall. However, the Constitution gives the power of the purse and the power to appropriate money to Congress, not the president. This is why I voted to terminate the national emergency. It is important we follow the laws of the Constitution and are consistent on this issue. I ran on sticking to constitutional principles, and my responsibility to defend the Constitution is greater than any party politics. As your representative, it's my duty to promote transparency and trust in our electoral institutions, and I'll continue working to make our government more effective for all Americans. Yeah, here's the problem. He voted against the resolution. In other words, he's just another lying maggot. Yeah. He was one of the 182 Republicans who voted against it on February 26th. When his office was contacted, Jimmy Keady, who was a member of the Riegelman staff, he says, sent out as a result of staff error, and 25 constituents received it. But then they sent out one saying he voted against it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Staff error, even though it was pretty unequivocal with the whole business about the Constitution gives the purse powers of the purse and the power to appropriate money to Congress, not the president. That's why I voted to terminate the national emergency. Almost sounds to me like one of those mistakes that you make if you really, really need a mistake to sort of save your ass, and the 25 people you sent it out to are the 25 people who wrote in saying, "You dick!" That's how it, yeah, right. Yeah, well, see, that's what I thought. Steve in New York saying, "A champion when not even playing." That's vintage Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il. maybe he got a copy of the playbook when he was visiting there in Vietnam. You can't say Vietnam. You wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So, I think Thorn in the Side Thursday's shaping up pretty thorny. Don't you? And as I noted, it's not Thorn in the Side. It's not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. But, well, like I said, you got to deal with the stories when they come along. They had a little problem, according to WDAF. They had a little problem at the Apostolic Revival Church on Teen Night. Young Quentin Graham, a teenager, said, "I was having a good time in the beginning. And when the service started, he muttered something like, 'We're sheep and not goats.'
But the leader of the church heard it, apparently, and pulled out a freedom protector and threatened the kid. When young Quentin Graham tried to walk out, he was attacked by a bunch of the grown men. He said, they grabbed me, grabbed my arm, grabbed my shirt. When one of those grown men twisted my arm, I swung on him and things really got crazy. And that's when they went outside and the preacher pointed the gun at him and he said, I'll kill you. And Quentin Graham said, do it. And after that's when I really started going off, Quentin Graham said. WDAF-TV Fox 13 asked him if he pointed the gun at the teenager in the gospel sharp. Said, I'll not comment to that. I'll say we did try to de-escalate the situation, and it got out of control to the point we were uncomfortable. We, you know, him and that gun in his pocket. If there's anything I regret is that I could not help this young man. Man, put up thy gun into its place. For him that lives by the gun shall die by the gun. Oh, that's a good one. Brother Deacon Asa says, forget about building the border wall. Trump needs to hire a crew to build a fucking floor under his approval rating. Ooh, that was good. That was very good. And, of course, Julius Geezer can't see a piece of legislation as simply a matter of the political process. He was described earlier today as seeing it as a loyalty test, because that's how mob bosses think. Mm-hmm. Over on CNN, Gloria Borger said, while some Republicans and all Democrats see this vote as really a way to stop the power grab, sources say the president sees this as a loyalty test. That was Brooke Baldwin. How big of an embarrassment might this be to the president? Borger replied, pretty big embarrassment. This is the second time he's going to lose something in the Senate. The first time came when Republicans voted to pull back American aid to Saudi forces in Yemen. There's the opening line to that one Drive-By Truckers song where Patterson Hood sings, something about the wrinkle in your forehead tells me there's a fit about to be thrown. I'd say the odds are pretty damn good, really, when you get right down to it. Let's got a couple of minutes here. Let's just check and see if he's... Yeah, there it is. 3 hours ago. I look forward to vetoing the just-passed Democrat-inspired resolution. Resolutions capitalized. Which would, all caps, open borders while increasing capital crime, capital D drugs, and capital T trafficking in our capital C country. I thank all of the strong Republicans who voted to support border security and our desperately needed, all caps, wall! Good God, he's stupid. Yeah. But more and more people are pointing out that, you know, apparently the Spirokeets are unable to get the job done anymore. We had the Tim Apple thing where he told two separate lies about why he said Tim Apple. Because he knows that people are looking at him and they realize that he's falling apart before our very eyes. And so today, with cameras running, he was asked about the whole kidnapping children policy and whether he thought that was, well, cruel. I'd say we're almost an hour into the program, and it's the hockey puck warning is more than, yeah, get it. 5, 4, 3, duct tape 2, 2, 1.
Election issue. Okay, anything else?
Are your immigration policies cruel?
No, I don't think they're cruel. I think they're the opposite of cruel. They become cruel because they're so ridiculous and it hurts people. It actually does the reverse of what they're supposed to be doing.
How about that? 18 seconds into a 1 minute and 52 second clip and I'm already lost. How about you? This is from the press avail after the visit by the Prime Minister of Ireland to the White House.
Well, you know, she wasn't Irish. My mama was from Scotland, though, and that's kind of like Ireland.
Did he say? I kind of wish, you know, if this was a program that had video, we'd have like a chalkboard or something. And maybe in moments like this, we'd try to diagram the sentence in an effort to maybe just parse or tease even a little bit of sense out of the senselessness. Because I'm licked here. I just am.
Election issue. Okay, anything else?
Are your immigration policies cruel?
Are your immigration policies cruel?
No, I don't think they're cruel. I think they're the opposite of cruel. They become cruel because...
Okay, so why say that? Why, if they're... No, I think they're not cruel. They're the opposite of cruel. The only reason you say they're the opposite of cruel is because you can't think of what the opposite of cruel is. Isn't the opposite of cruel kind? I mean, I know I'm not the only practitioner and devotee here of the art of word-knowing. Cruel, kind, cruel. Cruel to be kind in the right measure. Singing. It could get worse. There could be more singing. We've made it an hour through the program. Gary and Guy's challenge was met. There's $250 left. Don't make me do a concert. $250 to go, 10 at 25, 25 at 10, unless you want the singing.
Because they're so ridiculous, and it hurts people. It actually does the reverse of what they're supposed to be doing. But no, they're actually meant to be the opposite, and they're hurting people. They're really hurting people, a lot of people.
Is it hurting
and,
your reputation?
And I...
Yeah, meanwhile, the entire Irish press corps is going, Jesus Christ, it was a hell of a lot easier understanding James Joyce's Ulysses, and he was one of us. Opposite of cruel. Begorra!
I think that we have done an incredible job. We're apprehending record numbers of people. But if we had border security, if we had the wall, if we had a proper wall, which we're building now as we speak, and we...
No, there, he's not. Somebody's told him that they are, but that's to try to get him to quit throwing his Cheerios on the floor and having a tantrum. There's no wall being built.
Getting a lot more funding for it, as you know, in what we're talking about and the vote today, whether it's positive or not, I'm vetoing it, unless I don't have to veto. I think that's unlikely. I'll do a veto. It's not going to be overturned.
Another one of those days when it's just a real problem that I don't keep liquor on hand anymore. Because, I mean, the swirly straw would be in the 1.75 about 5 minutes ago. Oh, dear, dear Bob, says Stephen, New York, you're seeking a planet of rationality and an entire cosmos of ignorance and stupid. You know, this is like you need a space vehicle capable of crossing entire galaxies. Lee in New York, kidnapping children. Trump is in favor of children being kidnapped. He has at least three he would like to see kidnapped. I think Tiffany and Barron are safe. He forgets about them. Yet there was a Tiffany sighting in Serbia. Agnes showed me that. Tiffany Trump said, I don't know if she was modeling bikinis or something, but yeah, two out of three baby mamas managed to keep him from having too much influence on their lives, so probably Tiffany hasn't committed any gross and overtly criminal acts, and well, he's still young enough, young Baron, that the law would deem him incapable. Oh wait, he'd probably have the juvie. Oh my God.
I got a great idea. We'll have Baron do it all. We'll blame him, and they can't put him in prison because he's a juvie. At most, he'll spend some time in juvie hall, and we can probably send him to my alma mater, where I went when they were going to put me in juvie hall, and it'll all work out great.
But we have done a great job at the border through apprehension, but we shouldn't have to be put in a position of apprehending 75,000 people a month. We shouldn't be in that position. Thank you all very much. I love being with the Prime Minister of Ireland. Thank you very much. We're doing very well with China talks. China talks are doing very well. We'll see what happens. If it's not a deal that's a great deal for us, we're not going to make it. But I would say that we're moving along at a very high level. We're getting what we have to get. And I think we're getting it.
Dude, it's a very high level. It's like bubblegum kush level.
Relatively quickly. So the China talks are moving along as to whether or not strike a final deal. That I would never want to say, but they're moving along very well.
Mr. President, did you...
Wouldn't you hate to be a Republican and have to pretend that that actually made sense? Nobody really knows what he was talking about. Nobody knows what is ridiculous that... Right. Yeah, Lee in New York says, the ball is being built. It's made of beautiful Lego pieces. Trump works on it every night. Okay. Yeah, you got me. So that's a beginning. That's the front end of Thorn in the Side Thursday. We got other things, some more serious than others. We've got Mike Pencilneck Deek attacking Kamala Harris. The only problem is his little flack attacked her for something that existed only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between the flack's ears that pass for brains. Okay. Sorry. Sometimes there are visuals in the chat room. See what you're missing by not being in the chat room? That was what that snort was about. Otto DeChat just posted a picture of Julius Geezer and melanoma from Alabama, in which, if I'm not mistaken, Mitch McConnell's face has been photoshopped and morphed onto melanomas. Yeah, that's a real nightmare factory there, Otto. Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. All right, so we're past the first hour of the program. It is a Thursday, so, hell, let's see what Brad and Desi are up to.
It's Thursday, March 14, 2019.
The report calls for the U.S. government to recognize the fiscal challenges climate change will bring.
GAO report warns Trump administration's climate rollbacks will waste billions in taxpayer dollars.
All those particles in the air, that's holding a lot of garbage.
Experts warn repeal of air pollution standards could increase autism. Climate change is already eroding coastal property values. Plus,
we need to demonstrate that we share a common goal of a low-carbon future and that we are in action towards it.
Is climate activism pushing a shift in the fossil fuel industry?
All of those questions and more answered straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
President Trump has called global warming a hoax. and the head of the Environmental Protection Agency is a climate change skeptic.
No, he's a climate change denier. Get it straight, Al Jazeera, unless you are Holocaust skeptics. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, over the past few days, it has been reported that the air in Denver, the pollution has been worse than it has been in Beijing. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. It's luckily only temporary, but do keep that in mind when you hear about this. A group of scientists and public health experts have warned that the Trump administration's rollbacks of air pollution standards could cause an increase in neurological developmental disorders in America's children, like autism, ADHD, memory deficiencies, and lowered intelligence. The experts said that increasing evidence links autism spectrum disorders to prenatal exposure to traffic-related air pollutants. Mm. The Trump administration has proposed reversing Obama-era energy efficiency rules for light bulbs.
Of course they have.
Yep, and that's even against the wishes of industry manufacturers. The rules had triggered innovation and have already saved U.S. consumers millions of dollars in energy costs.
So years ago, when Fox News and Republicans were freaking out, claiming that Barack Obama was banning light bulbs, and now we've got these way better light bulbs that are much cheaper than they were initially. Now Trump wants to go back to where we were 5 years ago?
Yes.
Of course they do.
Meanwhile, the Government Accountability Office, in a new report, said that the Trump administration's rollbacks of a broad range of climate policies threatens to waste taxpayer dollars because the administration is failing to protect the country against the financial risks posed by climate change, and then that would reduce overall federal spending on disasters. Climate change is already eroding coastal property values. A new analysis by the First Street Foundation calculated that between 2005 and 2017, 17 states saw $16 billion in losses from coastal flooding caused by rising sea levels and stronger storms. That is also bad news for coastal communities because flooding is eroding their property tax base right when they need revenue for repairs and adaptation. But there is some cautiously, potentially good news. Norway sent shockwaves to the oil industry when it announced last week that it is phasing out its investments in oil companies that specialize in exploration.
Cool.
From its $1 trillion national sovereign wealth fund in order to reduce exposure to volatile oil prices.
Very cool.
Then last month, one of the world's largest oil companies, Royal Dutch Shell, bought an electric vehicle battery company, a UK electric company, and announced it's partnering with a wind turbine manufacturer.
That's cool, too.
This week, at an energy industry conference in Texas, a top Shell executive said the company is readying itself for a fundamental shift in global energy supplies toward low-carbon sources. And he said Shell aims to become the largest electricity company by the 2030s. And finally, in a speech at that same fossil fuel energy conference in Texas, the CEO of BP, Bob Dudley, warned his colleagues in the oil and gas industry that they risk losing their social license to operate if they don't address what he obliquely called climate issues.
There's a rising tide of concern on many fronts about the lack of progress on climate issues. And I would say not just concern, but anger.
Dudley explicitly pointed to the global climate strike by teen climate activists around the world that's set for Friday, March 15th, to demand that their governments act aggressively on climate change. Dudley also pointed to the wildly popular Green New Deal resolution in the U.S. House as signs that the world is shifting and the oil industry must evolve with it.
We have to move from being pure play oil and gas companies into broader energy businesses. That means engaging more young people who will take to the streets on Friday. It means improving the dialogue we have with policymakers around the world, including those behind the Green New Deal. We need to demonstrate that we share a common goal of a low-carbon future and that we are in action towards it.
Good. And good luck with that. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
much too little too late to lie again with you. Too much too little too late.
I think that's Johnny Mathis, isn't it? Yeah, I do. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 14th of March. And by the way, I spent, and I don't know that I got anything accomplished whatsoever, but after last night's brought to you by Frontier's crummy internet service, telephone troubles, we may have actually... it may have settled down. It's been stable all day. So the phone lines are open. If you'd like to jump in, you're more than welcome. Bring something to the conversation. 304-574-8178 is one of the numbers. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's over where we were having problems last night. And the Skype line seems to be, not the Skype line, the stress line seems to be working well and consistently. And that, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And if you've got something that's just burning you up, well, jump right in. And, hey, first-time callers, rare callers, any kind of callers are all welcome. If you can't be comfortable in this program, well, I don't know how you'll ever be comfortable in one of those programs where you have to spit out everything that's on your mind in about 15 seconds. So give it a go if you're so interested. And, there's Steve from Georgistan. Made it into the chat room this evening. Hey, Steve, glad to have you there. Okay, let's run over and check in. Let's check in with Charlie and see if the line works. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Oh, nothing much, Bob. I was just wondering, do you think that it's coming to the point where Trump is coming unglued and self-destructing right in front of the American people?
Well, I've got a standing wager that at some point in time he tears off all of his clothes and plays with himself naked in front of the cameras. So, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable saying that that he is degrading before our very eyes. It's hard not to think that when you hear the. He didn't just lie once about the Tim Apple comment. He lied twice. And then there's that jabberwocky answer that he gave to the Irish press that I just played. How do you hear something like that, Charlie, and not feel absolutely confident that the guy has a screw loose?
Yeah. I just wonder if Mueller report is going to reveal anything, or whether it's just going to be something, you know, very low key, and everybody will go back to sleep again.
No, I don't think it can be low key now that Manafort's going up for almost 10 years. Roger Stone's trial date has been set for September of this year, and how he's supposed to stick to a gag order for, let's see, Cifrin, September, that's 9 minus 3, for 6 whole months. I don't see it. And then, of course, there's everybody else that's already pled guilty. And the desperation of Julius Geezer himself, Charlie, where he said, see, the judge in Manafort's case said no collusion. The judge said nothing of the sort. What the judge did was to upbraid Manafort's lawyer for trying to interpose the collusion issue into a case where collusion was never charged. So obviously the Julius Geezer White House thinks that there's some there, or else they wouldn't be freaking out the way they are. And make no mistake, they are in freak out. I mean, consider that you remember when James Mattis retired as Secretary of Defense?
Yep.
Okay. Initially, he said he'd stay on for a couple of months so there could be a smooth transition. But then Julius Geezer found out why Mattis quit and fired him on the spot and said, clean your desk out and don't let the sun set on you. Well, we still, and remember, we're talking here, you know, we're not talking about the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development or the Secretary of Education. We're talking about the Secretary of Defense, a principal among principals. We still don't even have a nominee for Secretary of Defense,
and we're in March, and we haven't had one for 2 full months. The guy who runs the Pentagon, we don't have one of those because Julius Geezer can't find anybody willing to be that for him, because sooner or later, he's either going to be asked to, he or she will either be asked to do something illegal, immoral, or insane. And nobody wants to go to prison for it.
You know, I guess what really bumfuzzles me is all the Trump supporters out here, no matter what Trump does, no matter how badly he screws up, no matter how many laws he breaks, they still support him.
Right, because he still supports their racism, their xenophobia, their bigotry. It's nothing but bias confirmation. That's why they still support him, because he is still making them feel good about the bigots and the racists and the xenophobes that they are. There's a powerful incentive to support somebody when that person is supporting you in a social behavior that nobody else has ever supported you in before, since at least like George Wallace. So,
well, I don't.
You know, the real question for me, Charlie, is if the Clementine Caligula was to really and for true just go babbling batshit crazy and take his clothes off and stand there naked in front of the cameras playing with the little Trump, how many maggots would say that he was still that he was? I mean, because at that point in time, you would just have to, okay, he's gone. He's just nuts. He's lost it. For whatever reason, he's non-compos mentis. But I'll bet you, Charlie, that 30% of the electorate of this country would say, well, sometimes you just got to get naked to make America great again.
Well,
I mean, I find that it feels like pure madness to say that. But isn't that kind of what and how the maggots are?
Yeah, Trump's not really making anything great again. I mean, you know, our stock market is crashing. You know, it's almost like Trump has an agreement with people, you know, I'm going to make this tweet today, so you need to short sell this, 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 and this, and get out of it before I make my tweet, because I'm going to take the stock market down again today.
Well, look what he did to those people who voted for him and supported him in Ohio. I'm sure you've probably seen the clip, Charlie. He stood there at a rally and said, "Don't sell your houses. The economy's going to go so way up. Don't move away from here. We're going to sell a lot of cars. Don't sell your house." You know, he said that. Don't sell your houses. So I guess some people took him at his word, and now there are thousands of people out of work who were at the GM Lordstown plant that GM had to shut down because of, among other things, these godforsaken tariffs. I mean, that was crazy. That was crazy to say that. I think if you were going to compile a list, Charlie, it would be a shorter list to say, let's list the things he said that weren't nuts. Hell, that'd probably fit on a post-it note.
Yeah. I don't know. I have kind of mixed emotions about tariffs. I don't think you can make your tariffs too high or people are not going to be able to afford your goods. But by the same token, you know, tariffs keep from foreign countries dumping on somebody else's economy. So I don't know where you should draw the line.
Well, the first thing you have to understand about tariffs is that governments don't pay them. People do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, we've had a problem for years, and God knows the steel workers and various other unions
have complained bitterly about it. You know, steel dumping. It's an issue. But the response, but you know, the proper response to that is diplomacy, negotiation, and the proper response is not to pull out your gun and wave it around and then shoot yourself in the foot and say, look, I'm willing to do that to my own foot. What'll I do to you?
Yeah.
And so, look, I mean, if you want it, I mean, here's the other part of it. You got a problem with China and steel dumping? Well, then why attack some of your best and most loyal trading partners like old Germany? Why attack German cars and German car manufacturers who build their cars in the United States when your steel problem is with China? You know, in all seriousness, that's the issue, Charlie. It's incoherent. It makes no sense. It does not cohere. It does not hold together.
Well, I just, first of all, I mean, if firms have manufacturing in the United States, they're probably not going to be affected that much by the tariffs. If firms have manufacturing that's overseas, yeah, they're going to be affected by the tariffs.
And look at the look at the degree to which our farmers are now dependent upon welfare via an FDR New Deal policy.
Yeah,
you know, sorghum farmers and soybean farmers, they've been taking an ass beating. But at least they're getting a welfare check. But most of those welfare checks aren't going to small family farms. They're going to massive corporate agribusiness.
Yeah, well, Archer's Daniel Midland and places like
ConAgra.
That. Yeah. And you know what really I can't understand about the farmers, and this is one of the beefs that I have about Kentucky and that I have about Mitch McConnell, is they will stand there and they will complain about people taking government assistance. And you just sit there and look at them like, and you're trying to tell me you don't take it?
Yeah. You know, one thing that is interesting, I didn't notice it until Lawrence O'Donnell brought this up a few days ago. Mitch McConnell still hasn't announced his reelection bid for 2020. How about that?
Yeah.
And if he was thoroughly committed, he would have announced something by now. But there was a whole list of people who have not announced re-election bids yet. Like,
well, maybe they don't.
Like all 20
they
of them.
Don't want to share the blame.
He put up Lawrence O'Donnell's people put up a graphic. The other night, GOP senators who have not declared they will not run for re-election in 2020. And it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 14. It's all 20. Whether it's Ben Sasse or Shelley Moore Capito or John Cornyn or Mitch McConnell. And Lawrence O'Donnell's theory on it was that they're sick to death of being embarrassed by having to carry water for Donald Trump. And these are, you know, these are hardline Republicans. Tom Giraffe Cotton of Arkansas, that intolerable lecturer Mike Enzi from Wyoming, the unbearable Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma, and on and on and on. I found that very interesting.
Well, I think most of the Republicans realize that their electorate, most of their electorate, are made up of people that just aren't very well educated, and they can say anything that they want to and get away with it, and they will be supported by their electorate. But, you know, I think all that's changing. You know, whenever these Trump tax cuts in, what is it, 10 years that the tax cuts go away for the only the corporations will be getting tax cuts.
Yeah, it, you know what?
You know,
nobody wants to be around when the chickens come home to roost.
And, you know, I have no pity for these people, these Trump supporters, that because they don't know, I don't think they understand what that tax bill is going to do to this country.
Well, see, I'm so old. I remember the Bush tax giveaway. You remember all that business? It's your money. We're going to send you a check. You can buy a washing machine. Only it wasn't free money. It was actually a loan against future tax obligations. And so, consequently, there were people who said, you know, it's going to, you know, here in a few years, right after Bush leaves office, it's going to suck to be in the United States because there's a lot of shit going to go crash into the ground. And the only flaw in it all was that the chickens came home to roost a little bit early and the market crashed in the fall of 2008 before Bush could get safely away. But that was okay because, you know, there was a black guy running for president, and of course we can blame him for anything, you know, because black guy. Which they then did.
Well, I think if people would have taken a logical view of it, Barack Obama was probably a little bit more in tune with the economics of the United States than most of the Republicans.
Well, it's not a cowbell thing, but you certainly win an award for the understatement of the evening. Because the Republicans don't want to be in tune with the economy of the United States. The only thing the Republicans are in tune with is how to line their pockets and how to pass through whatever's not lining their pockets to their buddies who fund their campaigns in the first place, whether it's fraudster bankers on Wall Street or any of the other corrupt 0.1% class.
Yeah, I don't think people realized the extent or how well educated Barack Obama was. And, you know, like you say, it was like, well, we have a stupid black man in the White House. And, you know, that's kind of what ruined everything is, you know, they had a well-educated man there, but nobody would listen to him because of the color of his skin.
That's about how it played out. Yep.
And, you know, now we've got, God forsake, we've got Donald Trump in there. And, I mean, I don't think Donald Trump really understands anything. If you ever sit down and listen to the man, I mean, he is dumber than a post.
Well, that's the whole thing. He's the Dunning-Kruger effect writ large. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. And that's a danger.
And,
you know, that might be cute as the vehicle for a sitcom, but it's pretty well terrifying in a president of the United States. A guy who thinks he knows everything and actually knows nothing? Sweet Jesus.
And then you've got the religious types that come up with this prosperity gospel. And if you've stole a lot of money during your life and, you know, you've got a pretty sizable bank account, why, you're a good person. You know, you did what God told you to, so God made you rich. And, well, I don't think God goes around making people rich. And, you know, people get rich.
Yeah, but that's, but
and
see,
if
that's,
they get rich very rapidly, it's because of unscrupulous dealings.
Well, that's modern American neo-Calvinism. Your wealth is a direct indicator of how much favor you hold with God.
And, you know, I get in a lot of trouble with people because I do not believe in the doctrine of Zionism and premillennialism. I just don't believe it. If you look in the New Testament, it says that God's not a respecter of persons, and that literally means a face looker. So, you know, I don't know. These religious types, they have just, I mean, they have come up with some of the most stupid things I've ever heard in my life, and people just keep on running after them. John Hagee's a prime example.
Oh, yeah. I thought of John Hagee when I was doing the story about that hateful rabbi who might be banned from the UK. He and Hagee would get along famously. I mean, imagine being so full of hate that you would claim that a baby born blind was blind because it was punished by some obnoxious juvenile delinquent in the sky. Because in a past life, the baby had viewed pornography. I mean, that's just nuts. I mean, that's somebody, that really is. That is somebody, Charlie, who needs to be locked up for their own safety.
Well, if you read in the New Testament, there was a man that was brought before Jesus who had palsy. And the rabbis wanted to know what sin has this person committed. And Jesus just flat told him, you know, he hadn't committed any sin. You know.
Yeah, these things happen.
So, you know, things happen, you know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever I was born a breech birth, and it left me with cerebral palsy. I mean, little babies are innocent. They don't know what they're doing. They can't commit sin. I mean, Don't people realize this?
Well, I'm probably the wrong guy to talk to about sin because I've got a much different view of it. You know, I don't think that a 3-year-old who snatches an extra cookie out of the cookie jar has somehow locked himself, if I believed in the kingdom of heaven, locked himself out of the kingdom of heaven unless Jesus intercedes on him over that fucking cookie, right?
No, children will do things like that. They don't understand. Their brain has not developed fully yet.
And even the law, law recognizes that, Charlie. There's something in the law called the rule of sevens. Up to the age of seven, children are presumed incapable of intentionally violating a law. That's why we don't have prisons full of 3-year-olds who blew away their mommies. Because remember, last year, or in the year before, too, probably, more Americans were killed by toddlers than were killed by Muslim terrorists.
That's because they were stupid enough to leave their guns out where the toddlers could get a hold of them.
Right, but we don't prosecute the toddler. From 7 to 14, we say that, you can maybe make a case about being knowledgeable enough to formulate criminal intent, and then from 14 up, we presume that you are capable of formulating criminal intent. So,
you know, these religious type people, you go back in the Old Testament, and Moses' wife's name was Miriam, and I believe she was from Ethiopia. And
yep, there we go. Sorry, Charlie, I've lost you, buddy. Go figure. The internet connection's still up. Well, let's keep it going, though, and run over to the stress line, see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from the kid of Georgia.
Hey, Reggie. What's up, man?
Well, how do you feel about those two broads in this college admission scandal?
Broads?
You know.
Broads?
Yeah,
we're using... Wait. Hold on, Reggie. We're going to use the term broads in 2019?
gay women.
Yeah, let's, yeah.
Yeah. What about those two? You know, Felicity Huffman and Laura Lawson, you know. Miss Begging from Full House. How do you feel about what they did? You know what they did is wrong, and they should pay the cost for it. You know, if you can't do the crime, then if you can't do the time, then you shouldn't have done the crime. You know what I mean? Don't do the crime if you can't do the time, right?
Well, that's what they said at the beginning of the old Beretta program. One, you know, I don't believe in anything religious.
Right.
But I do acknowledge that we have a legal system in this country that insists that a person is innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
Now, and you know, before I get hate mail saying, well, you know, I don't know, because it has not been adduced before a court of competent jurisdiction, complete with a trier of fact and law. Okay, so that much has to be taken into account. Secondly, I'm also aware, based on something that Jude wrote the other night, that it is interesting that Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin are the faces of this scandal, when the vast majority of the people charged just happened to be men.
Right.
But those two women were out, you know, were presumed to be wealthy and privileged, and since they were on TV, they become immediately the public face of the scandal. I'm not defending them. I'm not defending them.
No. Because what they did is wrong. What they did was wrong, and they should, you know, like you said, they should be tried by the jury of the appeal to be found innocent or guilty. So, you know, like you said, there's consequences to every action, and there should be repercussions and accountability to make a prove a point and prove an example to all the other Hollywood celebrities out there who are thinking about doing this. They probably think twice before ever doing this kind of stuff. You know, in other words, celebrity justice. I hope they get it. You know what I'm saying, bud?
Well, what do you want? What do you want to be done to them?
Well, we're going to serve some prison time, at least. Or apologize. What about you? What would you like for them to be done?
I would like for them to be tried, and I'd like to know every last detail about this sleazy scam that was being run.
Yeah.
Here's a fun question to ponder. Just a minute ago, I was talking about the rule of sevens with Charlie. And remember, I said from 1 to 7, a child is presumed not to be able to form intent. 7 to 14, it can go either way. 14 up, children are presumed capable of forming intent.
Right.
Let's say that there's proof that the kids in these scams knew damned well what mommy and daddy were doing.
Right.
Should they be expelled from their Ivy League colleges, or from Wake Forest, or Northeastern, or Boston U, or University of Southern California?
Well,
for having participated in a fraudulent admissions scam.
Well, certainly investigated, first, and then possibly expelled. You know, we gotta set an example, Bob. You know, because if you yourself, Bob Kincaid, did that for your grandkids or did it for your kids when they were young, you know what would have happened to you.
We never did. Exactly. We taught our kids that they had work to do and they damn well better do it.
Right.
I mean, there were actual examples of this. I remember. Ferg was in the Cub Scouts.
Right.
and there was the Cub Scout Bake Off.
Right.
And I like to cook, and he liked to be in the kitchen with me. He was a little guy. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, I'll help you. But yeah. He did the work. I showed him how to measure things. I showed him how to do things. But he did the work. And he made a cheesecake. Right. He made a cheesecake.
Right.
And it had a well in the middle of it that was full of caramel sauce. And then we studded it all the way around with chocolate-covered cashews. And it was delicious. The crust was made out of ground pecans instead of graham cracker crumbs. It was absolutely delicious. We went down to the local church, and he won. And that meant that he got to go to the Greenbrier Hotel, Reggie, and compete against kids from all over West Virginia, little Cub Scouts from all over West Virginia, with his cheesecake.
Right. That's because he won because of hard work.
Well, hold on. We're not halfway through the story.
Okay, go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
So we show up at the Greenbrier with our crummy little hillbilly cheesecake, and by God, there are desserts on tables down there that there is no way a 9-year-old made. There's no way that a 9-year-old's mommy or daddy made them. The only people capable of making those things were pastry chefs with years and years and years of experience.
Right. Right.
And it broke his heart.
Right, because he worked his, he busted his ass along with your help to get, to win. He busted his ass, and he didn't have any help except you. And like I said, he busted his ass along with your help to make it, to get to where he was. And then only to be disappointed when he got to the Greenbrier Hotel because he saw the desserts that I guess he thought were better than his because they were made by pastry chef, not by dining.
He didn't think they were better than his. He knew they were better than his.
Right.
And he didn't win, he didn't place, he didn't show, he didn't honorable mention, he didn't nothing.
So he lost, in other words.
Oh, he got his ass handed to him.
Right. Well, was he crying?
Because in a Cub Scout bake-off, Reggie, there were parents out there who were so obsessed
with winning
and with seeing their precious pumpkin be the winner, that they were willing to cheat. That's the bottom line of this whole scandal. We are a nation that cheats, okay? Especially in the upper economic echelons of this country, we are a nation that cheats.
Yeah, but shouldn't that be wrong to do?
You don't get a lot of kids from poor schools or kids from economically depressed areas cheating because, again, what you said earlier, if you get caught, they will bury you.
Yeah, you get caught, they will bury you, man. And they,
on the other hand, if you're wealthy enough in this country and you get caught, your wealth will save you.
That should be wrong, too. No one's above the law, right, Bob? I repeat, no one is above the law. And, there should be consequences and examples and accountability for everybody's actions. Yours, mine, the entire world's, everyone. Theirs, ours, the entire world's, everyone's actions, Bob. Like I said, have you done that for your grandkids or your kids? You'd be in jail right now, right?
I don't know that I'd be in jail, but I'd be close enough to it.
Yeah, you'd be close enough. You won't be able to talk your way out of it.
I damn sure couldn't deliver any lectures about how important it is to play by the damn rules.
Yeah, because when you broke plenty of them yourself, if you were that person, you know, hypocrite much? I mean, how could you tell somebody how to obey the rules and laws and regulations and you wind up breaking them all yourself? You know what I mean, Bob. You referring to them, you know, how can they stand in front of us and lecture us about rules, laws, regulations when they break them all the time? Right, Bob? And no consequences is being served among them. Right, Bob?
Yeah.
No consequences would be served among them. And they, you know, they like to lecture us about things they themselves don't adhere to, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, why do they always pull that, don't you know who I am card? You know, the white privilege
because,
card.
Because, well, the wealth privilege card. Yeah, there's white privilege that's wrapped into it, too. But there's also wealth privilege. And that's because, and the reason they do it is because it works.
Right. And, you know, if they do go to jail, they won't be able to show their mug shots if they do get photographed, you know, going to prison. Their mug shots won't be released. I mean, Laura Loughlin's and Felicity.
Yeah, I don't know. I read some story somewhere about how the FBI showed up to take Lori Loughlin away, and they had guns drawn. You know. Perish the thought.
Go ahead,
Bob. No. Just perish the thought. Hey, Reggie, I'm going to make room. I'm going to make room for a few more people. You have a good night, man.
All right, man. And I think I heard that they both got bailed out. They have both had $1 million bail.
Yeah. Well, Lori Loughlin had to come from Vancouver, so that's probably why the $1 million bond, because she's a flight risk.
Yeah. And Felicity Huffman was also bailed out.
Well, the Constitution says the Constitution says you have a right to a reasonable bail.
Right.
Making those two women put up $1 million bond. At least it's not, you know, it wasn't 10,000 where they can write a check for $1,000 and be done.
Right. It's $1 million. And I know they're crying because they're going broke. Had to spend their own money to get them to bail themselves out of jail. Well, you know, they shouldn't have put themselves in this situation if they couldn't handle it. You know, like I said, don't do crime if you can't do the time, right, Bob? And, you know, they put themselves out there. And you put yourself out there. Don't be surprised if, you know, karma and payback comes right back to you. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm sure they never thought that they'd get caught because this is just how the game was played. Reggie, I got to get out of here, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right, man.
See ya.
See you later, boss.
Bye now.
All right.
Reggie calling from Decatur, and I made some modifications on the fly. An incredibly expensive internet line is down again. It lasted all day long till we started doing the program. Yeah. Oh well. But all of that. Let me see if this is the right clip. Reggie bringing up the cheating scandal sort of reminded me of this.
Or Mr. Jameson, and I won't punish Mr. Willis. He's the only party to this incident who is still worthy of calling himself a bared man. I'm going to recommend to the disciplinary committee that you be expelled. Mr. Sims, you are a cover-up artist and you are a liar.
But not a snitch!
Excuse me?
No, I don't think I will.
Mr. Slade.
This is such a crock of shit!
Please watch your language, Mr. Slade. You are in the Baird School, not a barracks. Mr. Sims, I will give you one final opportunity to speak up.
Mr. Sims doesn't want it. He doesn't need to be labeled still worthy of being a Baird man. What the hell is that? What is your motto here? Boys, inform on your classmates. Save your hide. Anything short of that, we're going to burn you at the stake? Well, gentlemen, when the shit hits the fan, some guys run and some guys stay. Here's Charlie facing the fire, and there's George hiding in Big Daddy's pocket. And what are you doing? You're going to reward George and destroy Charlie.
Are you finished, Mr. Slade?
No, I'm just getting warmed up. I don't know who went to this place. William Howard Taft, William Jennings Bryan, William Tell, whoever. Their spirit is dead, if they ever had one. It's gone. You're building a rat ship here. A vessel for seagoing snitches. And if you think you're preparing these minnows for manhood, you better think again. Because I say you are killing the very spirit this institution proclaims it instills. What a sham. What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today? I mean, the only class in this act is sitting next to me, and I'm here to tell you, this boy's soul is intact. It's non-negotiable. You know how I know? Someone here, and I'm not going to say who, offered to buy it. Only Charlie here wasn't selling.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Out of order. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen. Boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that. You think you're merely sending this splendid foot soldier back home to Argon with his tail between his legs, but I say you are executing his soul! And why? Because he's not a bad man. Bad men. You hurt this boy, you're gonna be bad bums. The lot of you. And Harry, Jimmy, Trent, wherever you are out there, fuck you too.
Stand down, Mr. Slade.
I'm not finished. As I came in here, I heard those words. Cradle of leadership. Well, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. And it has fallen here. It has fallen. Makers of men, creators of leaders, be careful what kind of leaders you're producing here. I don't know if Charlie's silence here today is right or wrong. I'm not a judge or jury, but I can tell you this. He won't sell anybody out to buy his future. And that, my friends, is called integrity.
See, they'd like to have used that speech in the Manafort trial. In point of fact, that's what part of the defense counsel's braying about no collusion was about. But the other side of the coin is that the little shit weasels that Al Pacino calls out in that scene weren't there because of their extraordinary intellect. They were there because Daddy had been a Baird man, and Grandpappy had been a Baird man, and Great-Grandpappy had been a Baird man. Back to when Baird was, you know, a cabin in the woods. And with all due respect to the liberal traditions of New England is scattered with this shit. And it's in other parts of the country, too. Places where kids with real promise, real genius, will not get a superior education because a combination of wealth, access, skin color, gender, citizenship will keep them from reaching what these institutions promise to be the fullness of their potential. And that's what is so disgusting about the cheating scandal. But make no mistake, this is just 21st century cheating. This is gaming the system in a new and different way. Is there anybody out there that thinks that George W. Bush was such a goddamn fantastic student that Yale just had to have him? You know, just as was the case when he dodged the draft, there were people who went to Vietnam and died because he got to stay home. And there were people who didn't go to Yale because he took up a slot there because his daddy and his daddy's daddy and his daddy's daddy's daddy had been a Yale man. Fuck Yale. Fuck Harvard. Fuck the whole Ivy League. Fuck USC. Fuck Wake Forest. Fuck Duke. Fuck all of those institutions that were more than happy to be gamed. Darlene in Connecticut with a note lets me know a class action via CNBC, a class action lawsuit has been filed against 8 universities in connection with the massive college admissions bribery scandal. Federal criminal charges related to the scandal were filed Tuesday against TV stars Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, as well as top business and legal executives such as Manuel Enriquez of Hercules Capital and former Pacific Investment Management Company CEO Douglas Hodge. But make no mistake, we preach that message of cheaters never win and winners never cheat, and that's bullshit. It's bullshit on practically every level. There was a time before there were, I know, college athletics, but bear with me. There was a time when, before there were reforms to how many people could be on the roster, that a Bo Schembechler or a Woody Hayes would go and take a blue chip recruit out of high school, and the kid would stay the fifth string quarterback for 4 goddamn years just to make sure that the arch rival didn't get their hooks in him. And it wasn't just Ohio State, and it wasn't just Michigan. It happened at Georgia, it happened at Alabama, it happened at Notre Dame, it happened at USC, it happened at Texas. Because the system is inherently dishonest. And I'm not going to sit here and tell stories about what colleges I applied to or where I got in and didn't get in. I wasn't even serious about any of it. There was a crummy little state school right in my hometown. And I knew I could go there if worst came to worst. Because I knew I could go there. Because that was back when, even then, college was relatively inexpensive. Now, a kid who wants to go to the same institution that I graduated from here in West Virginia, that kid, to get a WVU degree, is going to wind up with $150,000 worth of fucking debt. For a WVU degree. Christ on crutches. What kid would roll the dice on being able to make the loan payments on $500,000? Can you imagine being 18 years old and pondering $500,000 in debt? Well, the kids in this scam didn't have to worry about that, because it was all going to be paid for anyway. All they had to do was cheat their way in. And so will there be any scent of a woman-style public hearings for the cheating children of the cheating parents? Are they still in college? Should they be expelled? If it's proven that they knew what was going on? No, here. No, come here, son. No. I know you've never played soccer in your life. Here, put this uniform on. Yeah, here's a soccer ball. No, don't hold the soccer ball. You can't hold a soccer ball, son. Put the soccer ball on the ground. kick it along for a little bit. We're just taking some pictures here. If anybody asks you, tell them you love soccer. We're trying to get you into a good school here. You don't want to go to Busted Knuckle Polytechnic, do you? Yep, we were due for one of those. Thank you, Matt. Matt in San Francisco. Stop telling us who to fuck, Bob. That could be the most important stop telling us of all time here on the horn. Megan says, this whole college cheating scandal really chaps my rear end. I didn't even apply to colleges out of my senior year of high school because I had to move out of state. When I finally settled in, I attended community college for 2 years till it got too expensive. There was a 13-year hiatus between the time I attended community college and finally graduated cum laude this past January from a state university because I had to work. If my manufacturing job hadn't moved out of state, I'd have never had the opportunity to finish. It breaks my heart to think of all the hardworking people who don't get the opportunity, pushed out to make room for wealthy kids who just want a party. This is how we get Kavanaughs and Trumps in high-level positions. The system needs to change big time. Yes. And by the way, there is that angle does exist within this story. From 2016 to now, you've had a steady parade of harumph, conservative Republicans. Who say, oh, those goddamn kids want to go to college for fucking free. How dare they? Colleges are for kids whose parents can cheat their way in. This changes everything in that discussion and in that dynamic. You realize that, right? James, damn it, I'm trying to be serious here. Wait a minute. Let the movie play out, Bob. I want to hear the blind guy put the moves on Ginger the Professor. You don't have that kind of time. But yeah, things are going to have to change out of this. That or we're just going to go on pretending that nothing went wrong here. That a few bad actors got caught doing a bad thing, when in fact this is probably systemic. If you were using epidemiological terms, you'd say that this was pandemic throughout the American educational system. Because I'm pretty sure that it doesn't work like, you know, we've got a dear friend who's a college professor in Japan. There may be economic factors at play, but I'm pretty sure it's not like this. I'm pretty sure it's not like this in Germany or Italy or France. There's a lot of fall in the British higher educational system, but you've still got a fighting chance if you can score the scores and make the grades. And yeah, for those of you who don't know, Ralph's asked that Al Pacino clip you played. What clip did you just play? That's the big speech from Scent of a Woman. Wonderful film. It's one of my favorites. Randy in PA says, if your significant legacy, your parents can stiff the school on the tuition. Don't ask me how. Okay, I won't. We'll just take you at your word. Megan says, drinks today. I have a whole case of Yingling beer I keep on hand for offerings to Thor, but there are certain days I don't think he minds I dip into it, and today's one of those days. I don't mind sharing, and the last time I did it was during Kavanaugh's hearing. David in South Carolina stands, subject line, no guilt. I could not sleep at night if I cheated like those parents did. I sleep quite well, and so does Candace, who more than holds her own with privileged kids. She, from the worst public school system in the United States of America. We have no financial wealth, nor do we have political power. No, there are attempts at so-called meritocracy in the Ivy Leagues. And, in fact, you've got a better chance there because they've got bigger endowments with which to do scholarships, tuition, room, board, books, that kind of thing. But it doesn't mean that the other side of that coin at an Ivy League school isn't what we're seeing here. What amazes me is the, well, Yale got dinged because they had a soccer coach who was willing to take bribes. The other schools, I mean, really is going, and I mean no offense to the USC fans out there. Fans, see, we're back to the sports references. Goddamn. Is USC that much more of a prestige statement than, say, UCLA? Are both of those more prestigious than Cal Irvine or Cal Davis or Cal San Luis Obispo? I don't know, because my knowledge of the California system is limited. But people about halfway flip out trying to get into these schools. And the saddest part of it all is the people who flip out, the kids who stress themselves beyond all recognition, and don't have anybody helping them, who see getting in and getting out as being the difference between two entirely different lives. As Asa points out, not to mention all the mountaintop removal blasts that help pay for these cheating bastards' Ivy League tuitions. Well, yeah, there's scions of family, families that are legacy admit still going to Harvard and Brown and Yale and Cornell, et cetera, at Dartmouth, et cetera, on monies that were made off of the backs of people who are long generations dead. They may be dead. Their offspring, the generations that follow them, may still be here. But the wealth that they created left here on barges and trains. But it's still working. It's still working. Because wealth privilege may be the most profound privilege of them all. Yep, that goddamned internet connection just sucks air. Hey, thanks to Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. We are down to only $240 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. That would mean $440 for tomorrow. If we could knock that down some, it would be great. And a reminder, on the front page at headon.live, there is an equipment fundraiser. We're trying to get an audio gizmo and a powerful laptop to run it for while I'm gone to D.C. and also to be used when we're in Philly for Netroots Nation later this year. It being Thorn in the Side Thursday, I saw an article earlier today. It was published yesterday. It's from a sleazy little website that allows a neo-maxi Zoom dweeby by the name of Ben Shapiro to write for them. He's one of those little right-wing asshats. He's a millennial right-wing asshat. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has taken up residence for free between his ears, too. You get a sense for the tenor of the article just from its opening paragraph. Oh, wait a minute. Subject line, his yacht looks like a freaking Carnival cruise ship. Don't remember anyone at my university offering me the opportunity to party on theirs. Seriously, USC didn't know? Why was Olivia Jade on the ship? That was another one of the stories that broke in the cheating scandal today. Lori Loughlin's daughter, Olivia Jade, was on the yacht that belonged to a cat by the name of Rick Caruso. No word on why she was on Rick Caruso's yacht. Rick Caruso is what? The president of the board of trustees of the University of Southern California? And Olivia Jade is, of course, one of those Instagram influencers. TMZ reporting as follows. As Lori Loughlin traveled from Vancouver to L.A. Tuesday night to surrender to federal authorities in the college bribery scandal, which got her daughter Olivia Jade into USC, Olivia spent the night on the yacht of the chairman of USC's Board of Trustees, but she's off the boat now, TMZ has learned. We've learned 19-year-old Olivia was on Rick Caruso's yacht in the Bahamas. Caruso's daughter Gianna, Olivia, and several other friends were spending spring break in the area. Oh, gosh, could they not go to the Fyre Festival? Gianna and Olivia have been friends for quite some time, occasionally posting photos of them together on social media. For a buck. Caruso, a billionaire who has major real estate holdings, including The Grove in L.A., tells TMZ, "My daughter and a group of students left for spring break prior to the government's announcement yesterday. Once we became aware of the investigation, the young woman decided it would be in her best interest to return home." Olivia is off the yacht. By the way, Caruso came out strong Tuesday in the wake of the indictment, saying, "The charges filed today against employees of USC are disturbing, and the alleged activity is absolutely wrong. I'm saddened that these people would abuse their positions of trust and, as the government has alleged, victimize USC in the process." Yes, USC, that allowed students to cheat their way in, is somehow the victim in this great cesspit of horse shit. "There is no option other than zero tolerance for this type of behavior. As a result, USC has fired the alleged wrongdoers, but I'm still the chairman of the Board of Trustees, and I'm just a real estate magnate. Hell, I can't..." Right. See, there are so many little roots underneath this poisonous tree, and one of those roots is the sickening notion in this country that wealth is an indicator of intelligence. I've been around wealth. Some. It isn't. Again, the only thing wealth indicates in the United States is that you were willing to put the acquisition of wealth ahead of everything else. And that you probably studied something related to acquiring wealth instead of studying something that would make you a better human being. That's why college college departments in the humanities are fucking drying up while they're building brand new buildings for the finance and the accounting department. Because this isn't a country that much cares. I mean, here's a question I can't answer. No fair using the internet. I don't know the answer to it. I'm guilty. Who is the poet laureate of the United States of America? Okay. Now, who is the richest man in the United States of America? Yeah, we can both answer the one, but we got no clue about the other. Who is the most heralded painter in the United States of America? Not a clue. Who's the greatest sculptor in the United States of America? Now, we can probably at least work up a decent disagreement over who's the greatest songwriter in the United States of America or the greatest actor, because they tend to have public faces. Who's the greatest novelist in the United States of America? Who's the greatest essayist in the United States of America? Nobody knows, because nobody cares, because the business of America is business. This country cares about one thing and one thing only, and that is the acquisition of wealth. Because that is what capitalism capitalizes on. If you can't generate wealth for somebody else who isn't doing anything in the first place, capitalism has no fucking use for you. None. Nah, Maya Angelou's dead. She used to be the poet laureate, I think. That's right. David in South Carolina, Stan points out, yeah, influencers brought us the Fyre Festival. They're making us eat cheese sandwiches. Every country, and you know, we have this ugly habit of thinking that every country is like this one. There are countries who value their poets. There are countries who value their novelists and their sculptors and their painters. But it's not a new phenomenon either. If you will open up your Bible to the complete works of Mark Twain, you'll find a short story called An Account of Captain Stormfield's Visit to Heaven. And in it, Twain writes of an afterlife, a heaven, where people who had monumental talent that went unrewarded and unremarked on earth are held up as the very epitome of that particular art in the afterlife. I think there's the one example is there's a barber that Shakespeare bows and scrapes before, because although he never published a word, he is acknowledged to have had a talent that far outstripped that of Sophocles, Euripides, Shakespeare, Moliere, Eugene O'Neill, Tennessee Williams, all of them. And the only reason you cheat your kid into a college is because you want that kid to be able to make a shit ton of money. Because, see, if your kid is an up-and-coming sculptor or an up-and-coming writer or an up-and-coming painter or an up-and-coming clarinetist or flautist, your kid will probably get into a good school. And by good school, I mean any school where she can learn more about what it is that she, about the art that she wants to make. On the other hand, if all you've got is your family's wealth and a desire to post pictures on Instagram in exchange for money, you're probably going to need a little help getting in. Princeton professor Tracy K. Smith, by the way, is the poet laureate of the United States. Still not much help, is it? We don't wander around reciting Tracy K. Smith's poetry, do we? No, no, we don't. But make no mistake, capitalism is at the bottom of this cheating scandal. Because pure capitalism doesn't care how you make the money as long as you make the money and other people can make money from it too. Because that's how it works. And I started talking about this stupid article by this stupid person, Ben Shapiro. Over the weekend, Democratic fresh face and socialist darling Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, DNY, spoke at the South by Southwest conference while sitting amidst the enormous bounty provided by capitalism, top-notch electronic equipment, a massive crowd of paid ticket holders. AOC tore into capitalism. She called the... And see, the way this little turd writes all of this makes it clear that he sees capitalism as some sort of religious fetish object and not an economic model. It is an orthodoxy that cannot be challenged. She called the system that has raised 80% of the globe from extreme poverty since 1980 irredeemable. She railed against the injustice of people having to work jobs rather than write poetry. Hey, you little shit-eating weasel turd. Writing poetry ain't easy. Study up on old Basho in ancient Japan, who devoted a lifetime to one goddamned haiku. Went back to it and back to it and back to it and back to it and tinkered with it and worked on it and sweated over it. Fuck you, Ben Shapiro, with a red-hot goddamn poker. Fuck you to pieces. As though socialist countries are famous for ensuring that people work only the jobs they find spiritually rewarding. No, countries with socialist aspects to their governance recognize that there are some really shitty jobs out there, and they try to make sure that people are compensated accordingly, that they have a little free time, that they have a little paid vacation every year, and that they get a break on the job. Ben Shapiro, who has never broken a sweat in his entire godforsaken goddamned life, has no idea why the United Auto Workers formed. The miserable, misbegotten hell monotony of putting a nut on a bolt, I'm not a handyman. For 8, 10, 12 hours a day. Or why the steel workers were formed when they were working an 84-hour work week. Yeah. Because people's lives are more than service to some godforsaken captain of industry. Ben Shapiro has no idea why the United Mine Workers, once one of the great unions in the United States, now a shadow of its former self and a life support system for people to worship Donald Trump. Ben Shapiro has no idea why that was formed, but I have personal knowledge why it was formed. Because this state has given something more than 100,000 working people's lives to make the lives of captains of industry better over the course of 100 or more years. Ben Shapiro is so upset that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would say something untoward, uncharitable about capitalism, but he's utterly clueless about the uncharitable things that capitalism has done to other human beings. He looks around the room and sees a lot of blinking lights and a lot of microphones and hears a PA system. And he's, oh, capitalism, yay! Well, a whole bunch of the shit in that auditorium was made by people chained to chained to tables in China for capitalism. It's disgusting. Capitalism has not been so good for Appalachia. Not so great for Cancer Alley in Louisiana, or the toxic waste sacrifice zone along the Gulf Coast in Houston. Not so great up in, what, North Dakota, where the Keystone XL pipeline ruptured and, gosh, only sent a quarter of a million gallons of filthy oil onto the ground and into the water there. How great was capitalism when it caused the Cuyahoga River to catch fire in Cleveland? Tell me about the glories of capitalism at Three Mile Island. See, if you actually challenge them on it, they can't defend it. And I just happen to have the pedigree that allows me to make that challenge. Darlene, a little bit ago, mentioned never having met her grandfather. I've got a grandfather I never met. Largely thanks to capitalism. There are references to people's names in our family history that I never met because the only thing next to their name is killed in the mines. On the other side of the family, there are two or three brothers whose graves you can find on the hill 2 miles from me, killed on the railroad. Today, we had to go to Beckley to take Margie to the doctor. Stopped at Tamarack for lunch on the way back. And there's a sculpture there, more than life-size, of an African-American man raising his arm, desperately trying to breathe, because he is a memorial to the hundreds who died in the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster, whose bodies were just thrown in a common pit, whose lives were sacrificed for capitalism via the Union Carbide Corporation. We have names. Some of them are even old Native American words. Mananga. A little community where there was a mine in the early 1900s, and more than 362 men and some little boys were burned to death, crushed to death, asphyxiated to death, and blasted to death by capitalism. Because the only reason those mostly Italian immigrants who barely spoke English were in a hole in the ground when they weren't miners when they came here in the first fucking place was because somebody wanted some of that sweet black rock with which to make steel, with which to make guns, with which to make bombs, with which to make ships, with which to make cars, and railroad cars, and railroad engines, and rails. And it was near Christmas when the Monongah disaster occurred, and one of the coal bosses was heard to say when they finally twisted the coal company's arms enough to make them pay some pittance to the widows and orphans, it was, like I said, it was near Christmas, and one of the coal bosses was heard to say, "Well, this ought to make a pretty good Christmas for them widders and orphans." No thought for them after Christmas, though. And hard winter coming. And it was a cycle that was repeated generation after generation after generation after generation. Because this country values money over people. And so you've got a little twit like Ben Shapiro who says, finally, she settled on her most damning line of attack. America, as it currently stands, is garbage, because in the United States, if you don't have a job, you're left to die. That's an odd critique, given the long history of death associated with socialism, some 45 million deaths under Mao, communist, totalitarian, authoritarian, some 30 to 40 million under Stalin, communist, totalitarian, authoritarian, and some 2 million under Pol Pot, communist, authoritarian, totalitarian. But it's an even odder critique given the fact that life expectancy has radically increased under capitalism. In 1850, the average European life expectancy was 36.3 years, while today, the average life expectancy across Europe stands at approximately 80. Interesting. Most of those European countries have aspects of socialism in their government. Funny how he doesn't mention life expectancy in the United States because it doesn't work for him. Because with capitalism absolutely running amok, cheers, life expectancy is going down for men and women, especially in places like Appalachia, like McDowell County, West Virginia, where the life expectancy of a man is less than it is for a person in Guatemala, and roughly equal to the life expectancy of a man in Haiti. Oops. Yeah. We spend on a state and federal level at least $1.1 trillion per year on means-tested welfare programs. That means nearly $9,000 per household in the United States annually, or nearly $28,000 for every person living in poverty in the United States. Bullshit. Try living on $9,000 a year. There are people who do. It ain't pretty. Ocasio-Cortez makes the same mistake so many on the left do. She conflates government redistributionism with the social fabric itself. In her view, there is no social fabric absent government. Spoken like a true anti-government kind of right-wing troll. By the way, the headline was what really made me hoot like a barn owl. What liberals forget, before the welfare state, Americans took care of each other. Now, this kid is a kid. Maybe he's 32. Tops, he's 35. But I've forgotten more history than he will probably ever learn. And the fact of the matter is, the reason we have Social Security is because of what a disaster it was to be old in America before, say, 1930 or before 1932, especially those 12 years that were a Republican wonderland, an economic miracle. When if you lived in rural America and you were old and you didn't have a kid who was willing to take care of you, or several kids preferably, well, you were going to die. Because American capitalism had no notion of obligation. The indigenous peoples who were genocided and rubbed out and pushed out by the colonialists would have been sickened at the idea of just leaving their elders to the cruel whims of nature. They did not do that because, among other things, the elders possessed wisdom that the generations behind them had not yet acquired. And so every effort would be made to make sure that the elders were cared for. In America, up to the point at which Social Security becomes law, that was not the case. There was nowhere in America that was not absolutely plagued by the dire shame of elder poverty. Some places worse than others. In many ways, you had a better chance in rural America, and this is before the mass amount, the majority of the population of this country lived in cities. You had a better chance on a rural basis because there's the chance that you'd had a couple of kids and one of them was working the farm that you had worked, and you had earned a right to your rest. But with the, especially with the post-World War II economic boom and the desire to keep the economy on a persistent, full-time war footing, even that was destroyed. The extended family was replaced in favor of the so-called nuclear family, where families existed in isolation. And in some instances, many instances, far from their roots and their support system. Darlene in Connecticut says, I didn't even like what the DOJ official said when announcing Operation Varsity Blues. That this isn't like a family buying a building for a university in the hopes the building will be named after them and the school will admit their child in the future. Was he freaking kidding? How the hell's a quid pro quo like that any more acceptable? No, I saw that too, Darlene, and that was sickening. How many people can build a building for a dear alma mater? Oddly enough, my great uncle built a building for a college that's just down the river here. Used to be known as WVU, West Virginia Tech. Then it became WVU Tech. It was an engineering school. And now it's been abandoned, and they've moved the campus to Beckley. And his pride and joy, the science and mathematics building that he put up, well, old Orndorff Hall is part of some diploma mill now. Yeah. Want to get in? Build us a building. Well, okay. The whole thing needs to be gone through root and branch. So here with about 15 minutes left in the program, if you'll forgive me, I think I'm going to knock off because I didn't have any luck getting through tech support after 9 p.m. last night. So I'm hoping maybe, just maybe, I might get through beforehand. But lest we think the problem is limited to the likes of Ben Shapiro, let's check in with Representative Rob Bishop of Utah. Of course, a Republican. He said, not in any wise meaning to be engaging in hyperbole, for many people who live in the West, but also in rural and urban areas, well, it's pretty much everybody then, the ideas behind the Green New Deal are tantamount to genocide. That may be an overstatement, but not by a whole lot. Well, yeah, it kind of is, unless I missed something inside the Green New Deal where... And isn't it interesting that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is the sponsor in the House, is the one getting all the attention instead of Ed Markey, who is the sponsor in the Senate? Ed Markey's not living between anybody's ears rent-free. Just the sort of light brown girl from the Bronx. Yeah. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy at the news conference said, here's what the authors and co-sponsors of the Green New Deal aren't telling the American people. First, it's a bad deal for the working families and the low income, many of the constituents in my district. To throw away groundbreaking innovation that has already set the decline in American greenhouse gas emissions, like fracking, a natural gas revolution, solar and wind power. Jesus. Genocide. Hey, Rob Bishop, you fucking dummy. You know what's downright genocidal? Not doing anything about climate change. In fact, that's not just genocidal. That's speciesidal. That's extinction stuff. Idiots. Or, as the line from Dr. Strangelove goes, the fools. The mad fools. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Sorry about that, Bob. It's Mark, and I'm calling you from a different location than I normally do. But
well, hopefully it's secure and undisclosed.
That's a joke, Mark. I hear it. You know, I just wanted to tie the Solon scholarship story to the Robert Mueller investigation in regards to the fact that from what little I've read about Robert Mueller and John Kerry, there are other Americans. I would even kind of throw John Kennedy into the mix to some degree, for most of the degree. These are people of privilege that opted to valiantly serve their nation, and they served primarily in leadership roles of responsibility, and they had enlisted people working for them. That's people like myself. So I think these are people who turn their back on the automatic privilege of blue bloodism. And one of the stories I noted about Mueller was that he had a friend that he admired or was same age or an older student that went to the college, wherever he went, somewhere there, I think in Pennsylvania, but and he'd gotten killed. I think he may have been a Marine. So Mueller becomes a Marine. And I know, having been a Marine, I didn't. No one walked up and said, "Mark, this is what you've got to do." You could just see it, you could feel it, you could read it. You just knew you were a part of it. And I didn't know when to push and when to pull sometimes. And you got to be careful when you do, because it could be a career ender, whether you're trying to make E4 as a corporal or E8. And when you breach an officer or broach an officer, whenever you confront an officer, you have to be careful, because it's considered automatic insubordination. It's all in delivery and method, but you have to be bullheaded and strong and represent the will of the men and the mission. And so when you come in there, if you graduate from Quantico and you go through the training, and the officer indoctrination, as you know as an educated person, is different than the enlisted man's. But nonetheless, they eventually get with people like myself. And so we gang up on them, and any little move they make that's inappropriate, it's just like I'm on the job that I associated myself with in my career, we're going to jump on management. So I just wanted to draw those two connections. These are people that probably earned their spot for the most part. I think Kerry's father had a distinguished background, may have helped John Kerry personally, but I think he could carry the weight that he asked for as far as areas of responsibility with his intellect, and he has shored that up, in my opinion, as an American citizen and veteran, and as a former prosecutor himself. And I think those two guys actually knew each other, Kerry and Mueller. So I know it's a I'm wishing for positive results, but these are Americans, to include Kennedy, that walked away from privilege to a degree, at least temporarily, to honor and were educated by people like ourselves, Bob, that were workers, even though you were lucky enough to finish school and you're very smart. I love listening to you. So I just wanted to share that with the listeners that
not a lot of privilege on a PT boat, or you know, in a jungle in Vietnam.
No, not seeing a lot. That's correct. And I don't mean to besmirch any veteran of any branch, but when you hear all these, you can't go anywhere for the last 10 years without, you know, everybody wearing their baseball cap saying what ship or what branch or whatever they're doing. And it's being pushed on us at every truck stop. So everybody's wearing their hats. But people, I would just share, not that I was an expert in the field or even went to Vietnam, but I did listen and learn and serve with a lot of people that had been there as Marines. They were Marines. And one thing I noticed is people who say that they did a number of tours, maybe not number one in my class at West Point, but I did a number of tours in the Vietnam. There was an author, a barely published author, and you could buy his books at the PX. And he was a former Marine Corps captain, and he had been enlisted, and he wrote one book called Green Side Out, maybe another one was Brown Side Out. And he said most people who say they don't have stories to tell is because they're not done making them up. And he said that, you know, and it's just, it's kind of that working class ethic in the Marine Corps where people, in other words, people that were in other branches of the service, and they can't help it, they did their jobs responsibly, but did multiple tours of Vietnam. They were going there because they caught liberty in a safe area, or they made it to Hong Kong or Japan, and left soldiers, American soldiers and Marines, dying in the jungles. You know, it just kind of, even amongst enlisted people, there's kind of an ignorance of.
I've got a buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
I've got a buddy, Mark, who. I don't know why my audio is coming back at me, but.
I'm sorry.
I'm
gonna. Go ahead, Bob. I'm working on that. I'll
okay. Well, he was in Vietnam, two tours. And you practically have to drag information out of him. And the one thing I've noticed is that he doesn't have that Marine Corps sticker on the back of his car. He doesn't have a Marine Corps ball cap. He doesn't have a Marine Corps T-shirt. But when it comes time to get down to work with him, you don't need for him to have a hat or a sticker or a T-shirt or because all he knows how to do is plan the mission and execute the mission and not be willing to accept failure. And so, you know, he's
professional.
Over the course of the years, you know, he went, it's a little like Mueller. One of his buddies got killed, and the next Monday morning he was in the recruiter's office signing up.
Yeah.
And while he has told me a few stories, it's only because I practically dragged him out of him. So I think there's some merit to what you say, Mark.
Well, I just think, and I know you know, Bob, on a similar note, how is the gentleman that calls your show a lot that was in the hospital in West Virginia, the veteran that was the former DOD gentleman? Is he okay?
We haven't heard from Jim in a while. I hope his rehab's going well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay,
but
it's
been probably a month since we heard from Jim, but he was engaged in some pretty intense rehab. He said he was having to learn how to walk again.
Yeah. Well, if Jim's listening, I hope he's okay. Obviously, there's just a lot of unnecessary cheerleading in our society, and it's very superficial, it's very shallow, and it's very just unnecessary. And I think it leads to stupid behavior, leads to stupid results, and it's very easy with what we have occupying the White House. So and that goes to another comment that you've been talking earlier on the show about, but, you know, and the one caller and he doesn't realize what he does. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. You know, it's like when they first, you know, came in there, he wanted the nuclear weapons in Japan. And I left Japan in 1977 and on my way back to Los Angeles. And there were nuclear weapons in Japan. They were aimed at China and probably North Korea at the time. But they were occupied. They were to be found on U.S. naval ships and submarines. So, you know, but they, I understand he wanted to put land-based nuclear weapons in Japan, you know, for whatever.
Well, more disturbing, Mark, was the fact that he asked the question, what's the good in having them if we don't get to use them?
Well, right, and much trepidation. But I am actually smarter than all of my generals, except for one, my Department of State, Pompeo, but...
Well, you know, he graduated first in his class at West Point.
I'm sorry. What another embarrassing. I must work with 150 people that could do all of those jobs with more integrity and honor. But I just wanted to throw that out there that I think, you know, we still have Americans. We still have a few that have honor and integrity. And I don't think you have to wear a uniform to be of an integrous nature, but that you understand and respect, truly respect Americans, not talk at the subject, but that you actually do things to help them. You know, you talk a lot. Half of the conservative vote is folks that are associated with an evangelical approach to their realities, but nonetheless, they support people who oppose wheelchair ramps. And public school, I'm like, well, where's the Christianity? But anyway, Bob.
Well, because obviously that's an assault on freedom and the free market. The free market will make sure there are wheelchair ramps, goddammit.
Goddammit, Halliburton should have gotten these contracts. I don't care where we're going to build them. Let's just build them. So I just can't wait till Sears and Roebuck runs the sheriff's departments. And then we'll say,
Well, it ain't going to be Sears and Roebuck because they ain't around no more. They got taken out behind the barn and killed. By the way, Mark, Darlene in Connecticut says, yes, Mark is correct. The upperclassman who was so admired by Robert Mueller was David Hackett.
Okay. Wow.
He wasn't he wasn't an athlete, a best athlete on the field like Mueller was, but he was an incredible leader.
Oh.
May have done two tours, killed during the second tour, and Mueller and another of his Princeton classmates immediately went and enlisted. And Mueller still talks about Hackett to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, there. Well, there you go.
All right, Mark, you have yourself a good evening, my friend. Good to hear from you.
It's good to hear your voice every day, Bob. I'm on the road away from my family, but even when I'm home, I go out and eat dinner with you in my car and listen to you so I can always be ready to be top secret and undercover brother. But anyway, God bless you, Bob.
Well, you take care, Mark, and don't hesitate to drop a line and let me know what's on the menu for dinner. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. All right, buddy Mark. Didn't knock off early after all. Listen, okay, this is worth a cowbell. That's for James in Illinois. The best painter in America, Earl Scheib. Yeah, see, you understand why the cowbell. James also observed, capitalism never did a goddamn thing by itself. Labor could survive and thrive without it. We need a government so big that it could strangle capitalism. And, of course, if you ask a little neo-maxi-zoom dweeby like Ben Shapiro, any regulation of capitalism amounts to strangling capitalism. That's what you've got to have. You've got to have some kind of regulation. Because if you the funny thing about all of that is that if you criticize capitalism, well, you saw how Ben Shapiro did it there in the portion that I read. Oh, goddamn, Pol Pot! Nobody's saying Pol Pot. Nobody's saying Mao. Nobody's saying Stalin. One, they were all Leninist communist authoritarians. You could drive 15 trains side by side through the gap between Soviet style communism and Karl Marx. But beyond that, it's funny the way that they are so knee-jerk protective, not of capitalism, but of predatory practices and a cult of wealth. See, I commit heresy on this program. I suggest that there's nothing special about rich people, except for their bank balance. Jesus Christ, Donald Trump should teach us that. A shitty, tawdry, vain, ignorant little pissant who was the darling of the tabloids for most of his life because of the wealth he was perceived to have and who he fucked. That's it. That's going to be your last goddamn thought when you're about to breathe out and not breathe in again. Ooh, I was in the tabloids for who I fucked. Jesus. Yeah. Okay, so it's time for me to call tech support and sit on hold for a nice long time. Because Frontier sucks. Let's get together tomorrow for Friday on the front porch when the fundraising goal will be $440, one of Sparky's favorite numbers. Old inside wireman that he is. That's a joke. 440. But we'll get there, and that's what the fundraising goal will be. And if you want to help us with the equipment fundraiser again. There's a link right there on the front page at headon.live that keeps track of that kind of thing. So thank you to everybody who's jumped in so far. We got about $1,700 to go. And thanks to all of you who do keep the program on the air. Thanks to Charlie for meeting Gary and Gaia's challenge. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you earlier this evening to both Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years fighting for human rights, human dignity, and environmental justice in the heart of the sacrifice zone. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.